Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
In this show, we're going to dive deep into flips, wholesales, holding rentals, and creatively structuring deals.
So that we can show you how you can achieve that lifestyle of freedom that you desire. Hey guys, thanks so much for checking out the show. We're excited to spend a little bit of time with you guys today. We have awesome guests with us from our local market here in Boise, Idaho. This is Ryan Meyer. This guy does a handful of flips a year, owns about 16 rentals in the Treasure Valley, owns a cabinet company, and still follows his passion and does some PT work as well. So we're excited to have Ryan on the show. He's going to drop a bunch of knowledge and content for us today. So we're just super excited for that. Thanks for being with us today, Ryan.
Hey, thanks, guys. I'm excited.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
I was going to add, too, before we start, Ryan is one of the most giving guys in terms of information and knowledge that I know in our market. So I met with Ryan a little over a year ago. And at the time, there was no reason to meet with me. I was doing maybe a wholesale deal here or there, nothing special, nothing crazy. And, you know, he takes the time to meet with some random guy off Facebook and we sit down for an hour. And that 1 hour I spent with him changed the trajectory of my business going forward. Yeah. So we sat down and we talked about private money investing, raising private money, and using a company out here called Mountain West IRA. Which is a secure way for people to pull funds over from one retirement account to another. But this particular retirement account allows them to self-direct the investments. They can then invest in real estate. So by Ryan and I having that one conversation, I was able to go out and raise a couple $100,000 that we then reinvested back into our business, which allowed us to scale up from 2 to 3 flips at a time up to 5-6 flips at a time.
Yep.
So again, Ryan comes from this mindset of abundance and not scarcity. And so he's always willing to share information. So I just wanted to point that out and thank you for having that mindset and being that type of guy, man. We're happy to be around you. So
No problem. It's I'm happy to give and I also ask people, a lot of questions as well. So, I'm still learning, but it's good to help people out. And it's been awesome to see, what you've done and then you guys together have just been, awesome to watch.
So thanks, man. I really appreciate that. That's really cool to hear coming from you because you're, honestly, I don't know if there's another guy in our market who's as smart about the way money moves and how to make money work to your advantage than you.
Yeah, so it's cool to have you here. I'm constantly, trying to learn and, I'm always learning. I talked to you about just a couple weeks ago about the all-in-one.
Yeah.
Refi HELOC type of thing. So I'm constantly trying to read and learn and when I find something cool like that, I like to, throw it something people's way.
Let's talk about that. Let's put that on the show. So tell us about this all-in-one HELOC thing that you just did.
Yeah, so actually another buddy of mine told me about this. And it's a way to, so I'm going to do it on my investment property at first to pull out some money. So it's a HELOC on one of my rentals. And of course, if you've bought rentals and had them for a while, there's a whole bunch of equity.
Yeah. In the Treasure Valley.
Yeah. So I'm pulling some money out. So this all in one is, a first position HELOC.
Okay.
And the idea of it is that you use it kind of like a bank account. So you put all kind of your profit into it. As long as you don't spend more than you put into it, your daily interest rate and stuff is way low.
Okay.
So when you make your payments, it's going towards principal, so you can pay that off a lot faster.
Oh, okay.
So the real cool thing is I'm going to do it on my primary residence as well.
Okay.
So when we were talking about being able to get loans, I have to pay myself a W-2, hefty W-2 income this year. So right now it just goes into the bank.
Yeah.
It just sits there. Mm-hmm. So what I'm going to do is I'll put it into my HELOC, my first position HELOC on my primary residence, and it'll just tear up, as long as you're spending less than you put in, it's going to eat up that principal a lot. And then you make your monthly payment. You can pay it. The stuff I've read on is you can pay them off in 5-6 years.
Wow.
Depending on how much you put in. So it's your bank account. All the money goes in, you take a little bit out for money, groceries, whatever, mortgage, and it just stays in there. And then your next paycheck, you put it in.
Wow.
So to summarize, let me see if I'm understanding it correctly, because it's a pretty high level concept for anyone that's new to real estate. So they might not fully understand it. So let me see if I can break it down correctly. So it's this hybrid concept of a mortgage on your house is just strictly debt, right? So every single month you pay interest on what's left, your balance on your mortgage. Your bank account, separate, right? Your bank account, your money comes in from your paycheck, from your investments, from whatever else you've got going on. Your money just sits there.
Yeah, it's like, what, 1% interest and stuff on it?
If that, if you're lucky. Right?
So, 0.0034.
So what this does is it combines the two of them.
Okay.
So you have your debt, you have your savings, your bank, whatever, your bank account. Instead of your money sitting there and earning nothing, it sits in the same account as your mortgage sits. So then your principal balance is reduced, therefore you're paying way less interest. And that's where Ryan's talking about. As long as you're spending less than what's going into the account.
And that's the key thing in this. You have to already be good with money and know because you're gonna get yourself killed if you are taking more money out than you put in.
Yeah.
And that's the other key factor is with a mortgage, when you pay your payment, you can't pull that payment back out just because you want to. With this, you make $10,000 in 1 month, $10,000 goes into the account.
Yep.
Now you're paying $10,000 less in interest on your principal balance. Yep. But if you need to spend $3,000 that month, you pull your $3,000 back out. Now you have a net gain against your mortgage of $7,000.
That's awesome. So if you want to draw against it.
Man. Yes.
Yep.
That's brilliant.
Exactly. So
really cool.
So I'm doing that, you know, on one of my rentals, but I'm also going to be doing it on my primary residence.
Wow. That's
You have to be good with your money, though.
You
have to get in trouble fast.
So Noah can do this concept. Jeff cannot. So I got two kids, and we like to travel, so money flies. Man, that's cool. I like that. Let's dial back to the beginning, right? So goal of our show is entry-level investors and people wanting to take that next step. I always like to talk about the why. What got you inspired to do? Obviously, for most investors, it's not, hey, I want to get rich. I want to make money. No, it's, hey, I want to give back to people. I want to have time freedom. I want to do this. What was your motivational force, your why going into real estate? And then how did you get started?
Okay, yeah, I'll start back at the beginning. So I went to school for PT.
Okay.
It's a doctorate. So, you know, I got out of school at 27.
And, wow.
Came down here to Boise, was working at Mountain Land Physical Therapy in Meridian in what was the Idaho Athletic Club, now the Crunch. I started there in 2006, and then in 2009 they brought me over to the Nampa Idaho Athletic Club at the time, which is Crunch now, to start that clinic. So I started that clinic. We got real busy. We were doing really good, but constantly people would come in and say, "I worked, you know, 40 years at this job, and I live on a fixed income, and you know, I can't pay my copay." And, you know, after hearing that hundreds and hundreds of times, it was just, you know, knocking against me going, okay, if I'm going to work at Mountain Land for 40 years and barely survive, you know, what the hell? No way.
Yeah. What's the point?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, no, so it's like, okay, I got to do something, figure out something that can get me a little bit of extra income. And I never thought that it would take over my PT.
Yeah.
Never thought. But as I kind of jumped around to some stuff, I looked at Forbes 400 and noticed that a huge amount of people had made or hold a huge amount of money in real estate.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, let's look into that. So I started just buying rentals. I said, okay, I want the cash flow each month. So I bought a rental, and along the way, I came across some houses that I could put a chunk of money into, flip it, have some money to buy some more rentals.
Okay.
So that kind of just cascaded, kept rolling. So that's really what got me into it. And then, you know, I also had the issue of if I'm going to flip houses, I used all my money to buy the rental. What do I do? So then I started searching for money investors. Mm-hmm. So, I got a guy on, I was paying, he got 50% of profit and 8% of the money he lent me. So, But it got me going. And then as I was able to do that, I basically continued to talk with people, get more and more money investors. So, you know, that's really what got me going. And you know, at this point with the rentals and cash flow, I don't have to work even.
Yeah.
I've got enough cash
flow. What a powerful spot to be in.
Yeah.
You're young. So, like, to say, like, you're at a spot where you don't have to work anymore.
Yeah.
There's not many people at your age.
But can say I couldn't that. Do that. I would go crazy.
What do you do?
I could go and golf for a while or something, but then I'd just be, you know, super bored.
Yeah, so. You can only spend so much time in Mexico on a beach.
Yeah.
You got to come back eventually.
Ryan, you just got back from Mexico,
didn't you? I did, yeah. Yep, it was great. But so, you know, that got me going. So as I was getting busier and busier, I demoted myself from being the director at the PT clinic to just part-time. So I was initially working 20 hours a week, and then I went down to 12 hours a week.
Nice.
So I do a Monday, Wednesday, Friday in the morning from 7:30 to around 11:30 or noon, depending on how many patients I have. And since I've been there since 2009, I have a lot of patients that return to me. I have some doctors that send me a lot of patients. So I'm in there, see the patients, and I'm gone. So I get that fixed. I still keep up my skills.
Yeah.
You know, all that type of stuff. And something I enjoy. And like we were talking about earlier, I could probably make more money by completely going out of the PT. But it's pushing me to try to get people working for me to do some of that stuff so I can continue doing my PT.
Which I think is so smart. Like, one of the things that I really wish I would have done differently when I built my business is built for the future, built knowing that I wanted to scale this up, because my business, when I started like 6-7 years ago, it was just me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was, what can Jeff do today to make money?
Yes, exactly.
And that's not a business, that's a job. And sometimes it's a job that makes no money, and sometimes it's a high paying job, but regardless, it's still just a job, right? And so my goal was, hey, let me create more time for myself and my family. That's what I always wanted, but I didn't build for that. Like, I started in it. So I love that you're like, hey, I enjoy PT, but it also kind of gives me this like self-regulation, right? Like, it doesn't allow you to go and do this. Like, hey, I can't go and lay the floors, or hey, I can't go and find the deals. I can't be the guy on the phone, right? Because you're staying committed to that PT, which is then forcing you to build your team, which is ultimately going to get you to where you want to be much faster than you stepping into that role. So I think that's smart. Always build for where you want to go, not for where you're at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, so break it down for us on what are the most, like, because you are so disciplined with your time, what are the impactful things that you do that you will not outsource to other people in your real estate business?
Oh, that's good.
I think money, finding money.
Yeah. Is this a relationship game?
Yes. Oh my gosh.
You can't outsource who you are. You
know what I mean? Yeah. And I, you know, I think it helps with all the years I've done PT. I talk to people all the time.
Yeah.
So I can connect with people really easy. And so, you know, that's one of my main things throughout every day, all day long, is find money.
Yeah.
So if I'm talking to somebody and something comes up and, you know, they, you know, I hear somebody that has some investments, whatever, you know, I start talking to them about investing. So I continuously get more and more investors. I've actually got to run from here into Caldwell with this new investor guy, get him on board for a house we close tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
So kind of walking him through the process. So, I don't think I would ever outsource.
Yeah. I don't think there's a great way to outsource that. We hired some mentors this year, and they do about 100 to 150 flips a year. They're in Columbus, Ohio. It's a totally different market, but they're operating.
Oh, I think the,
High Hill.
Yeah.
Hills.
So I saw some of those. So I started watching, I saw you like some of those.
So
I
some
pretty good stuff.
Yeah. We hired them to be our mentor, and I just went out to Ohio like a month ago and did their sales and operations training. Like, they have systematized their business. And so, like, they will critique themselves more harshly than I've ever seen anybody be willing to look in the mirror. And I think that's why they're successful. And they said, like, hey, if you can point out something in my company and ask me what the procedure for that is, and I can't pull up a document out of my Google Drive, I failed. I was like, well, that's crazy. That's procedures. Awesome. But what, even amongst all that, what I was going to point out is that Tiffany, the owner of that, continues, her main focus is raising money. So she's at this very high level where they're operating it. She hasn't been in a flip that they've done in 2 years. She hasn't set foot in it.
Yeah.
But what is the one rule she holds on to? It's raising private money.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's all relationship. Like, I could pitch you on a house. Yeah, sure. We have shifted our mindset in the past 6 months to go, yeah, it's an asset-based loan, but I'm not pitching you on the house. I'm pitching you on who I am.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pitching you on my credibility.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They'll go in with you based on you more than the property.
Yeah. We literally have a lender right now that called me, and he's like, hey, I don't even want to put this in the email. We believe in you guys. Are you sure you like this deal? And I'm like, yeah, we're going to do some cool stuff that's going to make this a big deal. And he's like, okay, I won't do this loan for anybody else, but I know who you are. We're going to do it. I'm like,
exactly.
That's the, like, that's nobody huge. Else is going to raise that money for this deal. If I tried to hire a private money position, like, you can't do that.
You can't outsource
it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's based on who you are.
Most of my investors don't even ever look at the house.
Yeah.
Don't even know.
You gain that trust.
Yeah. Don't even know the house, anything about it.
So how much, if you don't feel comfortable sharing it, you don't have to. We'll share our number too. But how much in private money total do you manage?
Oh, gosh. well, I've got a couple really big guys
big
that have multi millions.
Wow.
But I've got probably eight others that have anywhere from, 50 to 500,000.
Nice.
Each. So you're probably talking.
I've got
10 million or so in
private. Well, I'd probably say. Probably more like five or so, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
that's a powerful spot to be in, though.
Yeah.
Because at that point, you have the capacity to buy stuff cash if you need to.
Exactly. And I don't put any of my own money into any deal. So I use investors for everything, for the purchase and the rehab.
Opium. Yeah. Other people's money.
Yeah.
That's.
And it was, relationship. And, they trust me. They'll put in, 100%. And. No issues. And everyone, the first one they do is they're a little apprehensive, but after they get that payoff after that first one, they're like, hey, let's go.
Yep.
And we're talking about me trying to get a project manager because I've got six flips right now.
Nice.
But I'm having to run around doing some of this stuff, so it's pulling me from finding more deals. I've got four money people that contacted me in the last week saying, hey, we got more money, let's go.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh crap, I gotta find some more properties. That's a good position to be in.
Yeah, it's a good spot to be in. Yeah, it's way better than finding a deal and being like, crap. I don't have the money.
I find somebody? Yeah.
I love it. So other people's money, that is key, but I want to bring it back to something you said on your first deal. This, I think, is going to be a reoccurring theme on our show. The first deal, you gave away 50% of the deal and still paid an 8% return.
So 50% plus paid the investor 8%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that is key because people get it. And it's so funny. We did an episode right before this and same thing came up. People get stuck in this like, no, I found the deal. I want to make as much money as I can. Get rid of that mindset.
Yeah.
There will be more deals. Find a way to do this deal.
That was a ticket that got me in the door. Once I got a couple there, then I could start pitching other people.
Yeah, that
way easy.
Yep.
The money doesn't matter as much as the experience does.
Yeah.
One, you're going to learn how to do a flip. Two, you have something to add to your resume now. You don't get a job without a resume, right?
Yeah.
Like, you got to provide a resume. So I'll do it. Like, honestly, looking back at it, like, if I could have done my first deal at the age of 18 and gave away 80% of the deal, bro, I'll do the work and, like, let me pay my bills and I'm good, because it would have added to my resume at 18, and then how much faster would I have took off?
Exactly.
Like, first time investors, don't think that you have to hold on to a high equity position. Like, yeah, make your money, but also add to your resume, because then you can pitch people and, hey, this is what I've done, this is what I can pay you. And then you start to have a little bit of negotiation, right? Because you're in a better position.
Yep. From there, I was able to, the next investor, I was able to go 12% and then 10%.
Yeah.
And, I can just keep going down and, they're fine with it.
Like,
they're good with it.
Because it becomes safer every time for them, right? Like, there's no difference other than you and your skill set. There's no difference in the house that you flipped 5 years ago and the house that you're flipping now. They probably had similar numbers. I mean, purchase prices changed a lot.
Yeah, a little bit.
Percentage-wise, right? Like, you're still making the same percentage on a flip, probably a little less, a little more maybe. But the deal doesn't change. The deal is the same, but now you're getting better terms because your credibility has been boosted.
Yeah.
So that's what matters.
I don't know if you guys have read the book Traction, but
That's an awesome book.
Actually, I got the books mixed up. I was thinking Go Giver.
I was like, you haven't read Traction all the way, but I'm not going to call you out on the podcast. Like,
Traction's really good.
Yeah, Traction is super good.
But Go Giver talks about, and I want to put this quote in our office, but it's to always give more in value than you receive in payment. And your first deal, that's very transparent that that's what you did, right? Yeah. You gave way more in value than you received in payment. Mm-hmm. That opened that door.
Oh, yes, it did.
It's a floodgate, right? Yep. There's no flood. There's no water that runs until you pull the dam.
Yep.
And you can't do that until you're willing to give up more. And yeah, I agree completely. Get rid of the mindset that you found it. It's your deal.
No, yeah. Dude, abundance, like, man. You got to operate in abundance. Yeah. Scarcity is going to leave your bank account scarce. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to do deals. You're not going to increase volume. You got to operate in abundance. And I'm a firm believer you got to operate in a giving mentality too. Like, every person that I know, at least in our local market, that does success or has a successful business is such a generous person with their time, their energy, their money, like everything.
Yep.
You don't get there by stepping on other people. So I
And the Boise area is way too small. If you do that to somebody, you're going to, everyone's going to know instantly.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of us talk to each other.
Yep.
And, you know, so.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, are they, you know, competitors? It's like, there's a lot of houses out there.
Yeah.
No, there's no, we're not. I mean, occasionally we might be competing against the same house, but, you know, most of the time it's.
Maybe we don't ever find out, but I don't know that we've ever competed with another investor on a house.
Oh, no, we've told. Well, not on our off market one.
But that's exactly. That's the key. If you find them off market, you have no one you're competing against.
Yeah.
And that's the best way to do it. And that's why most of these wholesale deals and stuff, I don't even pay attention to.
Yeah, we stopped.
Because it's going to go way more than I want.
Yeah.
And I have a margin, and a lot of these new flippers are barely scraping by, and one little thing happens and they lose money and I don't.
Yeah.
Well, they might not in this market, but when the market changes, they will be lucky. Caught.
Yeah, flip for the future. Don't flip based on now too. I think, and on those hotel things, I think you get a lot of hybrid flippers is what I call them, right? So, hey, I'm a contractor, so I'm gonna flip this house, but I'm gonna do the work, and I'm gonna make 30 grand, but I'm not paying myself to paint the house or do the floors. Then you're not making 30 grand.
Yep, exactly.
Or hey, my wife's a realtor, she's gonna list it, so her commission. So we get a lot of hybrid flippers on those wholesales, so it's like, can't even look at those. I do still get on the Facebook threads though and say I'll offer a dollar more than whoever else gives the highest offer just for fun.
Yeah. Which is funny you saying that, because we're like the ultimate hybrid company. Because you come from a contracting background and I come from a real estate background.
Yeah, but I think what has set us apart is like, yeah, we're a hybrid, but we don't operate in that mentality. No. We don't count your commission as profit. We don't count we're fortunate our GC crew doesn't have any markup. We just pay straight cost, time, and material. But we don't factor that in as like, oh, we're boosting our profit based on that. Like, we still have our profit.
They're all separate.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It gets dangerous when you're like, hey, well, I'll go paint the house. Because it gets dangerous, or it's like, if you read the E-Myth is the book that talks about, like, you have the roles. You could be the technician, the manager, the entrepreneur, right? Well, if you're at the job site and you're putting the paint on, you're just a technician, you're not building a business.
Well, and yeah, and that's exactly, that's is the stuff you can contract out and have people do and use your time to find deals and money.
Yep.
Like, stuff that is harder to come upon. And
yeah,
you know, and it's exactly what I'm trying to do is get more people in there that I can focus on.
Yeah.
Those,
somebody in our local market told me, Jeff, make a list of all the things that you shouldn't be doing, and anytime you do those, charge your company $250 an hour. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, I will lose a lot of money doing that, because if I go and help the guys with floors or something, well, that flooring literally just costs $1,000 for 4 hours of my work, because 100%. I'm more valuable off the job site.
Exactly.
It's just a mindset set shift. All over the place.
Mindset shift.
There you go. Mindset shift. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you.
Hey, so I want to spend, I know we're going to be running towards the end of the podcast here.
What's your cutoff time, Ryan, just so we...
Doesn't really matter.
Okay, cool.
But what I want to do is I want to pick your brain more on like the things that you're like so knowledgeable about that I feel like so many people could gain from. So like, let's talk a little bit more about like money and how to move that around creatively and like how to use that towards buying assets and things like that. So maybe we can talk about, you know, start with what our conversation was a year ago. Like, what's an IRA? Like, what does that mean to put money into an IRA, and how can someone use that to invest in real estate with somebody else?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people out there have retired, they have money, you know, in stocks and stuff. And back when I first started, it was stocks were kind of iffy up and down. People were really apprehensive about what was going on. And here at Mountain West IRA, you can move it straight across. You don't get any penalties or anything.
move it into Mountain West IRA, yeah, and yeah. then we can self-direct it, and they can put it into deals with me. So I've brought, you know, quite a few people to over the years to Mountain West IRA
yeah.
to do this. So that was really kind of the start of it. When I was first working on finding money, I was, you know, talking to them and finding those people that had that money.
Yeah.
That were apprehensive about the stock market.
Yeah. And then you're adding value in two ways. You're presenting an opportunity that they can make money on their money, but you're also now showing this IRA, which maybe they knew about, maybe they didn't. You helped them take the action steps. That's a huge value add for somebody who is making, I don't know, 3-4% in the stock market. If you're lucky, like, okay, good. You had a good year. You're adding value because now you're showing them a way they make 8-12% and their money grows tax free in an IRA.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that's exactly. an insane amount of value to add to somebody.
And yeah, the stock, like stock market right now is doing good, but I still find that people like being able to have a tangible.
Yeah. It's security.
It's a big difference.
And it's a deed of trust on this property. Uh-huh. Yep. Like the stock, yep. it can go up and down. They can't control it.
Mm-hmm.
Here it's like, we've got this house.
Yeah.
We're forcing equity.
Yeah.
We're forcing equity by doing a remodel.
Yep.
And that way you're in a good position. The day we start the remodel, that normally we're buying below value anyway. So the day we buy a house, your money is protected by equity. If not, if it was a skinny deal, the day we start rehab, that house is gaining value exactly. every single day, and you're in an equity position. You can't say the same about stocks.
No.
If Elon Musk goes and smokes weed on a podcast, Tesla stock going to drop it. You can't control
that. That's exactly what I was going to say that I don't like is that the stocks, you know, you go put $100,000 into stocks and you diversify and put it into five companies. What happens if one of those companies goes down, the other one CEO goes off and does you know, there's some type of scandal that he's involved with.
Yep.
Those things plummet. And now what we're learning is that there could be pools of people with decent amounts of money that can manipulate the stock market.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
It's so crazy. And, you know, the other thing about real estate is you can buy real estate at a discount.
Mm-hmm.
We do it. That's what we do. We do it all the time.
Yep.
Right? Can you buy stocks at a discount?
No.
Unless you want to be in jail.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah.
I set the buy price really low, but then it never executes the order. I don't
understand. Yeah, exactly. Why? So, you know, so I still, even with the market, the stock market doing well, I still have people that are willing to go, okay, let's move money over. And
One final difference that I just thought about is the stock market has no bottom. It can, the company can literally go to zero and go bankrupt.
Yeah.
A house can't go to zero.
No. Yeah.
Even if the house burns down, you still have the land.
And you got insurance money.
And you got insurance money. The house can't go to zero. You're in a dip. Okay, find a way to hold the asset for 5 years.
Exactly. That's what I was about ready to say. If something happened, we hold it. And, you know, throughout history, real estate has gone up.
Yeah. And so I always tell people when you do real estate, find your niche, right? Find your niche, what you're good at. And I say that with a grain of salt, though, because find your niche to get started. But then as you start to build, become multifaceted. So you flip to buy rentals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you're not a flipper to make a bunch of money. You're a flipper to buy rentals to create cash flow. So you're a multifaceted investor. Mm-hmm. One, you know how to get money and raise money and get people to make more money on their money. That's awesome. Two, you know how to flip houses. Three, you're doing rentals. And you have so much power in doing that, because if you're going to do a flip, and for some reason, I mean, we're in a great market right now, but if we woke up tomorrow and the market dipped, you're in a position, because you're multifaceted, because you set yourself up, you can refinance that into a rental. You now just protected your income, but you also just protected your investor from taking a potential loss or like the deal not working out like it was supposed to. So find your niche when you get started, but then quickly become multifaceted in real estate. I think that's the only way you push and do not even volume, but have high success.
Well, again, flipping is a hustle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's not passive at all.
When you get to the point where you're done with the hustle, you're done. Like, there's no more flips.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm using, you know, my flip money to buy rentals. So I can go, okay, hey, I'm going to go to Europe for 4 months and backpack and, you know, not have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Type of thing.
Yeah. So you own 16 rentals now? Mm-hmm. What's your total cash flow on all of them combined per month?
Cash flow is probably with this last one is probably right about $6,000, I think.
That's really freaking awesome. And then, so how many years from the time you bought your first rental till now?
Let's see. I bought my first one probably 2013.
Wow. That's, dude, that's
somewhere. Yeah, so that's 7 years and not doing it full time. You were still passionate about PT and doing that.
So I just went part time about 3 years
ago. Man, that's crazy.
Yeah. I think. So for those listening, that's really powerful, right? Like, how long would it take you to get a raise of $6,000 a month? It's going to take more than 7 years.
But also, it's powerful because you didn't just cold turkey, I'm quitting, I'm done. Like, it was cool you had a passion for that career, so you stayed with it. But I feel like some people who get started in real estate, like, they have a good corporate job. They don't love their job, so they cut cold turkey. Well, cool if you can do it. Awesome. Great for you. But not everybody can. And, like, guys like Ryan show us that there's another route, right? I can maintain my job, maintain my W-2, because if you have a W-2, you're going to be way more bankable anyway. So you can get rentals. You can grow passive income. Then that allows you to have credibility, raise money for flips. Flips allow you to buy rentals. It's literally a cycle. So there's power in, as you get started, not cutting 100%. Out your source of income.
Yeah.
Babe, the other thing I wanted to touch base with you on, Ryan, was you were talking about using this other interesting type of financing. Interest-only loans. So specifically, I want to hear about some of the projects that you're putting those loans on and why. And then I want to talk about your thought process with timing that with where this particular market is at and where you think it'll be in like 5 years.
Okay, yeah. So mostly, you know, if I could get real loans from the bank, that'd be 30-year awesome.
30-year mortgages.
Yeah, it would be. That's preferable for sure. But I've gotten to the point, you know, I bring my stuff to get a loan and they go, holy shit, this is going to take way too much work. Yeah. And I feel like they just toss it in the garbage 100%. And go, sorry, you don't qualify.
Yeah.
And then the other thing like we were talking about earlier is they kept coming back and saying, oh, you don't have enough W-2 income. Yeah. I'm like, I just paid taxes on how much money?
For real.
And, oh, but that's not W-2 income, so that doesn't count. And so this is stuff I'm learning, and I've never had anyone tell me this. So this year I had to start paying myself a W-2 income from my businesses. Yep. And so because I had trouble getting loans, I had to start finding ways to be able to keep my rentals.
Yeah.
And one way there was a Civic financial, and they'll do interest only and loan in your LLC.
So it's not individual based.
No, they don't look at you at yourself, even though you could look at my financials and I'm fine. They just banks just don't like I have so many rentals. I mean, I don't basically have any debt except some student loans and my mortgages.
Yeah.
But they freak out about that.
Yeah. It's so funny because you could probably have, if you had like $400,000 worth of vehicles, the bank would be like, oh yeah, you want to buy a house? You're fine.
Yeah.
But you have
a mortgage,
$2 million worth of houses. And they're like, I don't know about that.
And I make plenty of cash flow from it.
Yeah.
But they still have an issue. So
it's mind blowing.
Yeah. It's insane. So, Finance Civic Financial, they'll look at you and then go on a 1.0 debt coverage ratio. They'll loan out as long as there's one.
What's the debt coverage ratio?
So the debt coverage ratio is basically how much you're paying out compared to what you get in.
Okay. So it's a relationship to like the gross income from the property, right? So like what comes in minus what goes out,
and that
difference.
Yep. So it's got to be 1.0 is you're making monthly what you're spending.
Okay, nice. Okay.
Which is nothing. Like I wouldn't want that rental anyway.
Wouldn't be your standard.
No, yeah. I look for, you know, $400-$500+ a month in cash flow on my rentals.
Yeah, that's good.
So using this vehicle will get me into it, and then I will then, you know, a couple years down the road, combine them into a commercial loan.
Yeah. Smart
to a get big them. Like a blanket mortgage, like on all of them.
Yep. So to put a handful of all of them into a commercial loan. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So then it would, company like CoreVest or something.
I used Horizon, which was Icon.
Okay.
Prior. So I have a couple commercial loans where I put some of my handful of the rentals into them.
Yeah.
So that's my plan with this is, you know, I'll use them to get in a couple years down the road. Put it into a commercial loan in a 30-year, they'll look at it in like 20, you know, type of thing. But it's a 30-year amortized loan.
Yep. So, again, guys, multifaceted and adaptability, right? If found out, hey, the W-2 income doesn't support getting this loan. Oh, man, I can't do the project. Nope, get that mindset out of here. Let's learn how to adapt. We're going to adapt. Fine. We're going to find a loan that works. And sure, maybe it's not ideal because you're not paying down principal, but one, you're going to have, I love it
because
you're
going to have killer cash flow. But you can pay down interest if
yeah,
you want.
Yep, you can throw it into it. Yeah, principal. It just does, it's not forced. So
yeah.
But so you adapt, you find a loan that works with a long-term play in mind of, hey, I'll, in 3-4 years, 5 years, whatever, I'll roll this into a portfolio or a commercial loan. So find ways to adapt, but you can't do that without having knowledge and being multifaceted. Yeah. So I think that's key.
So me being a paranoid guy, I'm paranoid about everything.
He really is. It's ridiculous.
So, you know, I've actually talked with Jeff about this. We were looking at some similar project, putting interest-only loans on them. Mm-hmm. But I sat there and I said, okay, we put an interest-only loan on a what project if? Now that is worth tons of money and we have equity in.
Yeah.
But what happens if in 5 years when the interest-only loan is up, if it is dropped below the equity we have, meaning now to close that project, we'd have to bring more cash to closing. So, I mean, that's like worst, absolute worst case scenario. Like our market, with the equity we have, our projects would have to drop like 30, 40% in value.
Yeah, right, because yeah. we're not, Civic Software is like an 80% loan to value. We're not taking out the 80. We're paying off
cash
what we
out,
owe,
exactly.
Cash out our partners if we have a partner, or cash out the money lenders, and that's it. We're not looking to put money in our pockets on these things. So we're going to be at like the 2 or 3 that we're doing here. We'll be like 65% loan to value.
Yep.
So exactly. Sure, there's a what if, but because we know there's a what if, we're not going to take out 80%, right? Whereas if I was in the bottom of a market, yeah, maybe I'll take out 80% because I'll take that cash and I'll go and turn it. But knowing that Boise has just appreciated like 40%, like, no, I'm good. I'll be smart. I'll take out 65%. So then in 5 years, even if we've gone down a little, quote me on this, but just know I'm not a financial advisor. I don't see Boise ever being 40% below where it's done now, like ever in history.
Yeah, it would be quite a...
Yeah,
big
like
thing
even in 2008, I think we suffered like 28% was the average appreciation lost in a house, like, or average equity lost in a house. And that took 4 or 5 years. And yeah, Boise has a lot of stuff supporting our market as well. So the what if is there, but factor for the what if and then make a smart decision in the now so that if the what if happens, you're still protected.
Is there anything you're doing to protect your, I mean, I know that there is, but like, can you break it down for us on some of the things you're looking at to protect yourself?
With the
interest-only loans in case something were to happen.
Before you answer that, would you consider yourself a more bullish investor, or are you more kind of like reserved conservative?
No, I'm more bullish.
Okay, yeah. I like to preface
I'm
with
more,
that.
Yeah, that's more aggressive. Definitely, I like to push it a little bit more.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. And Noah's reserved, so it works out well. But so now we have that in mind. It'll give some context.
Yeah, so... you know, when I first started buying rentals, the crash had just happened, and a lot of people had lost a lot of their rentals and stuff. And so talking and interviewing a lot of these people I ended up buying houses from and stuff is they had no reserves.
Yeah.
Zero reserves. So, you know, my goal is, you know, I want to be able to have somewhere liquid money of a year's worth of mortgage payment for each rental.
Yep, that's smart.
So, so I initially was keeping it in the bank, but again, the bank isn't making any money. So I recently, and I talked to you about this a little while ago, is I did a high cash value life insurance plan.
Yeah. We finally got our setup.
So, oh, you did?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
You know what's funny? Okay. I'm realizing I'm not giving you even as much credit as the things that I've picked up from you, because we're talking about the life insurance. I forgot that we took action on that.
Yep.
And you were talking about we actually talked about this the first time we sat down, which was paying yourself a higher W-2 wage.
Yep.
And as I just looked back, I convinced Jeff.
Yeah.
And this year we both just reported as high income. As we could, I took like maybe 40% of my write-offs. Mm-hmm. I didn't take all 100% of my write-offs.
I've done that plenty of times.
But I looked at the big picture and I said, do I want to give Uncle Sam an extra $30,000 this year?
Now, yep.
And in exchange for them banks looking at me and saying, yeah, sure, Noah, you want a $2 million line of credit? Not a problem. You and Jeff both just cleared multiple six figures last year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not a problem. I will give you a $2 million line of credit. Or Do I want to keep my 30 grand?
Yeah.
And have the bank look at me and say, dude, you don't even qualify yeah. for a Honda Civic.
I know. yep.
Yeah, so just so you guys know, that came from Ryan. This is why I wanted you on the show so badly. And I was so excited for you to come on because yeah. of conversations like that, right? Like we talked about, okay, report, like that's such yeah. a backward. Who else thinks I'm going to give more to the government and pay more in taxes, yeah. take less of my write-offs to become more bankable? Yeah. That's not, yeah, that's not sure. a normal mindset. But no, that's your not. Mindset.
Yeah. I love it.
Well, yeah. And that came because, you know, I couldn't get yeah. loans. Yeah. So I had to yeah. go, okay, I'm going to write off less yep. so I can show more, you know, income to be able to get it. So, yeah. So back to the money in the bank.
Yeah.
I recently, started a high cash value life insurance plan where I can put the money into it, but I can still pull a big money chunk out. Of it yeah. back out.
Yep.
So, in about 5 years, I'll have put in as much as I can take out. So it takes a little bit yeah. to get going, but I also have, you know, like 2.3 million life insurance plan.
Yeah. yeah.
Too. So if something happens,
that's a good contingency plan.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of,
yeah. When we met with our guys, I was like, wait, you're telling me there's an account that I can dump money into and then just draw against it, but then I don't pay taxes because it's not my money.
Exactly.
I was like, that is brilliant. Let's do it. And then they're like, well, there are some caps you could put in. I was like, no, I just want to throw all the money in right now.
Yeah.
They make you space it out a little bit, but it still has an immense amount of value.
It does. That's yeah.
smart. I love it.
Yeah. And everything learning growing up, it was like, oh, these things are crap. Don't use them. Don't. Yep. But, you know, the more I've learned and stuff, it was, and look back on people who gave me that advice, they aren't where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
So they don't
oh, that's
have
so
a,
good.
They don't have a clue. So you've got to take it, you know, a grain of salt with where you're getting stuff yeah. from. If, yep. if they're giving you, you know, advice on money, yet they're in debt.
Yeah.
And living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
Don't listen.
Don't listen. Go talk to somebody else. There's a lot yeah. of us out there that, you know, we'd love to sit down and talk with people yeah. and, you know, give you some of our thoughts. And,
yeah. I love it, man. I think that's so good. Find value or seek advice from people who are where you want to be. And it yeah. doesn't have to be like, oh, if you don't have money, I'm not listening to you on anything. No, if you're a real estate guy and you are where I want to be in real estate, I'll listen to you. If you're a spiritual guy and you are where I want to be in my spirituality, I'll listen to the advice you have. If you're a great husband and a great father, I will take all the advice you have because those two roles are hard. Well, tell me yeah, what you got.
Like, exactly. It's funny. Some of these going with the marriage thing is there's some books out there written marriage books by people that have been divorced seven times.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, why I'm would people listening. Ever listen to this yep. stuff? And the same thing with money.
Yeah.
You've got to look back on, and most everyone has no clue about money.
No.
Yeah.
They not have been works. All completely taught wrong.
Yeah. Because we're not taught. We're set up. I don't want to go on a huge rant, but we're set up to fail. We're,
yeah, we are.
The,
yeah.
Our society 100%. Exists off of making money off of people not knowing how to utilize money.
Exactly.
And it's yeah. not to say that, like, you know, a job or working for somebody else is wrong, because there are some really great jobs and really great companies and opportunities.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And there's a trade-off. Some, and yeah, like, I'm not going to knock jobs. Like, there's some people who don't want that risk or that stress. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, yeah, sure, we have a high-functioning business, but there's nights when I don't sleep still. There's nights when I'm stressed out. Like, that's the risk, or that's the Ryan's laughing. He's like, yeah, I've been there,
oh,
man.
Gosh.
I just did an Instagram story today that this is like my fourth or fifth 15-hour day in a row.
Yeah.
But I
yeah.
love it. Like, I'm willing to do that because of a bigger why. Like, I want to create multi-generational wealth.
Well, I was just trying to get yeah. here on time because I had to go run to a job site and get yeah. stuff there because we didn't get stuff there to get tile started, and I didn't want it delayed.
Yeah.
So I was running around getting stuff there. So, I mean, yeah, this it's fun stuff. So working long hours and stuff isn't.
Yeah. And there's ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
It's corporate works for
but
some
but that's
people.
Why you work yep. hard, and then you go and go, hey, I'm going to Mexico for a week.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
whatever. You got to get yep. away and recharge. And,
yep.
you know, on the you know, trips to Mexico, I sit down and I evaluate.
Yeah.
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 And I come back with a whole plan of what I'm going to do to change yeah. and grow, you know, my
giving
business.
The goosebumps, yeah.
It's so crucial. I actually just gave Noah a compliment this the other day. He goes on these little, like, two. He's really good about setting time aside to hang out with his wife, right? Because she's going into residency, so he knows that time's not going to be available. So he's been really smart this early summer. making trips. And I was like, man, you're doing a lot of trips. I was like, come on, bro, we got to work. But every time Noah comes back, he just comes back with a new list, right? Of like 30 things.
Exactly.
And like, I'm more the integrator in our company. I'm totally fine with that. Like, I love operations. I love sales. Like, I love like talking to the project managers, seeing how they're doing. I'm cool with that role. So I'm like in the day to day, and Noah's great at being the visionary. So he comes back just recharged with this list of stuff that maybe I would have thought about, but I'll never step out to think about it. So having another piece is crucial. Or if you don't have the other piece, set aside that time for yourself where you can get away and focus on big picture stuff, right?
Yeah.
Because in the day to day, you don't think about building and scaling. You think about, let's get this flip done. How do we assign this contract? How do we get a deal tomorrow, right? That's what you're thinking about. You're not thinking of how am I building long-term wealth or how are we scaling this up and growing this really big. So I think that's huge, man. Time away, focus, re-energize, recharge, come back with a vision.
Yeah. Yeah. So your recent trip to Mexico, what did you come back with? What were maybe one or two of the
takeaways? So I was really working on specifically getting a project manager.
Mm-hmm.
I need one bad. Yeah. It's really taken, like I've gotten more and more money recently, more and more flips. Yep. And it's taken me away from finding even more money in more flips because I'm trying to run these jobs,
yep.
You know, and I've tried, you know, project managers and on specific jobs and
pilot testing them and stuff like
that. And they, you know, do okay. But I want somebody that basically on payroll that I can have run all my jobs and go, okay, you're going to be, this is how I want you to do it. I can be more specific instead of a.
And I feel like that's a really hard role to find because a lot of those guys who can do it effectively can flip and start their own company and do their own thing. And so it's really hard to find somebody who has that skill set but is also willing to run your projects. So it's not an easy position to fill.
No, so that's what I'm working on. But I think there's going to be a lot of people can probably do that well, but it takes a different type of person to be able to find the flips and find the money.
Yeah, oh, 100%. Yeah.
So there's, you know, I think there's still going to be out there people out there. Yeah. And then I also worked on, I need another acquisitions person, somebody to help me. I'm doing a lot of marketing, cold calling, all this type of stuff. So I need more people to be able to help reach out. And then the other thing was on my cabinet business, set up more channels of marketing.
Okay. Oh, and then didn't you get a window business too?
Well, so my cabinet business is Treasure Valley Cabinets Plus, and I added the plus on it because I knew I was going to add more things than this, just cabinets. So everything I'm going to be adding is stuff that's going to benefit me from flipping.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think
so. I'm going to get it at cost and be able to sell it to other people as well. So I started with the cabinets. We have the RTAs that come flat, and then we put them together. And then the semi-custom ones where we order in the certain sizes they come.
Yeah.
And then I added windows. And then I'm going to probably add like lighting next.
Nice.
I'm working on.
I love it.
I'm working on ordering a container of cabinets, so I'll have in-stock cabinets.
That's rad. Yeah. Yep.
So you know, and no other place that I found in Boise has in-stock cabinets,
unless you want Lowe's or Home Depot.
And those are crap.
They're horrible.
And these will be plywood sides, solid wood fronts, slow close hinges. So I'm going to start with one color, and then we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
And I'll probably never get a huge amount of colors. I'll probably like specialize in a couple, but I should be ordering that within the next month.
Nice. And you're going to start with like salmon pink to be safe, right?
Yeah, exactly. The ones that are going to sell.
One of the benefits I've noticed actually from you having your cabinet benefits is, or your cabinet business, is you'll do a flip in a market where I'll do a flip like Nampa, right? Nampa, I'm going to be cheap. I'm sorry. I'm going to go and get the Lowe's cabinets and I'm going to throw them in. Yeah. You look at Ryan's and he's got the Treasure Valley cabinets, which are nice shaker wood cabinets. Mm-hmm. And he probably paid the same or less than I paid at Lowe's.
Yeah.
And he has a way better product because you've set up this other
business. And in this market, it works.
It really does.
But for like using Lowe's and stuff, but when it gets a little different.
Yep.
That's not going to work.
Man, I know some guys in our market that are putting Lowe's and Home Depot in like $500,000 houses.
Oh, yeah. We could name some of them.
Yeah. I was like,
I'm not going to say that. But again, that's going to shift.
Yeah.
That's going to change. And then all of a sudden they're going to say, oh, man, look at those cabinets.
I'm not saying this for
that.
Yep. Yeah. And where I just believe in putting out a good product, especially if I'm going to charge a lot of money for it, like on a flip. So like my rule is, if I'm above, and we may need to reassess, it was 300, but it's probably like 350 now. If I'm above that, you're getting nice shaker cabinets. If I'm below that and it's a first time home buyer, you're probably just as happy right now in our market.
Just to
get into a house. So sure, I'll save a little bit of money. It's not a horrible product, but it's not a great product.
It'll break down a lot faster.
Yeah, it'll break down a lot faster. So we're being mindful at least and doing them in the lower ones. But I have noticed, like, man, people are just doing stuff and getting away with it. Like, and I'm a firm believer, we always say rehab for your market, right?
So
I'm on the bench, I'm rehabbing much different than I'm rehabbing in Caldwell, right? Well, it'd be dumb to do a bench remodel in Caldwell.
Well, that's some issues with what people do. Yeah. They don't look at the comps and go, okay, you know, none of these have granite, so why put granite in mine?
Exactly. People, they just get like, hey, this is what we do. Well, guess what? You also just did and spent $20,000 more in a rehab that you didn't need to.
And you didn't recoup it.
Yeah. But then there's also the flip side of the coin where, like, we just had Casey Ames in here, and dude's a luxury flipper. He does stuff that nobody else does, mm-hmm. and he pushes price points like I've never seen before. Like, he'll sell a house in the same neighborhood for $75,000 more than the guy who just flipped it, went like three houses down, because he saw, but he's smart too. He only does it in luxury neighborhoods, North End, nice bench neighborhoods. But so there's the flip of the coin, right? Like, don't overspend in Caldwell, but don't underspend in the North End, right?
Yeah. See, so, and that luxury market will never be my market because I'm very systematized.
Yeah.
I have listed out, you know, I use the same paint colors.
Yep.
I use the same lighting fixtures. Yep. I have a whole sheet that tells me, so based on the location, I have, this is what I use. So there is no me going to Home Depot thinking, oh, what type of tile or whatever. And it's
guessing,
like, it is right here. Choice, So I just jump online, order all the stuff, and I'm good. Yep. So that's how I like to run mine, is just very systematized.
Yep.
I think there's so many benefits to thinking and building up a business like that. So, like, you ever look at, like, the super trendy, like, tech superstars or whatever that are, like, in Silicon Valley? If you notice, a lot of times they have two different color t-shirts,
yeah,
two different color pants.
Yeah, I mean, so Steve Jobs, bro.
They don't make choices on their clothes. It's a gray t-shirt and black pants, or it's a gray pair of pants and a black t-shirt.
Yeah, why have to think about that when you have other things to worry about?
These pants in three colors, and I have about six Tree City Homes different color shirts, and that is all you will ever see me wear.
Yep.
Unless I'm going to church. I don't like to wear my company shirt at church. It's a little weird. I don't want to walk into church with a We Buy Houses on the back. In any condition, call me today or meet me in the lobby. We can talk.
Exactly. Exactly. But how many people at church have you talked about investing?
I'm weird. And I don't know if I will continue to do this. In my business about 4 years ago, I suffered some losses in Portland. And so since then, I've just set up. Everyone loses, right? And so I think it's a limiting belief, and I think I'll step out of it. And now we have such a great track record that I'm actually willing to now, but I separated out church. Like, I won't borrow from people that go to my church. It's not everybody does it. It's a weird rule that I have, and I think I will change it now that it's like.
You probably will, because how many of those people would love the return on what you have, and they know you personally?
Yeah. We have a guy in our church who literally is like, he is man, what do they call him? He flips businesses. Like, he buys tech. Like, that's the dude is a multi-billionaire and goes to our church in Meridian, Idaho.
Yeah.
And I, like, have refused to tap into it. And I'm like, just last week, I was like, all right, Jeff, it's about time. Like, you have a track record. We did literally, like, 30 flips in the past two quarters. Like, you have a track record. Go and get
some money. So I guess here's my question. One thing I did on my website is I have an investor login.
Oh, that's smart.
That lists all my flips I've ever done.
Yeah, that's really smart.
The amount the investor put in and how much money they made.
Yeah.
So when somebody's, you know, going, I don't know, I say, okay, go here, log in. This is my track record.
Yeah. We have a packet that it's a Google presentation thing that we send out. But I think an investor login, I think that's smart. Way more professional. Yeah. Like, hey, come. And then it also, it makes them take steps. Like, they have to get to that page, right?
Yeah.
If I send you a Google Slides presentation, all you have to do is click the button and open it. So, like, that's me still coming to you and saying, hey,
is great.
It's a direction towards, like, you're the one chasing.
Yeah.
Instead of.
They've shown, if they get to that website page, they've shown motivation to give you money. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that's really cool.
But that's, you know, that's pretty close to what I did in the beginning too, is I'd print off PDFs of before and afters. And I'd send them out to all the people. I made a list of everyone that had money, and you know, it might take 5-6 times, but eventually they see all this money they're missing out on. They go call up and say, "Hey, Ryan, we need to sit down and talk."
Yeah. Yeah. You know? So you were sending your, I was thinking, I was like, was it Ryan that was doing this? So you were sending packets saying, "Hey, here's a potential flip. And then at the end you were saying, this is how it turned out.
And then I send it after I flipped it and said, this is so how smart. Much the investor made.
Could have been you.
And yeah, exactly. And then I got quite a few people on that way.
That's really smart.
That's brilliant.
That is really smart.
And then, you know, a lot of these people have money. So I go and that you're, you know, obviously the people you're borrowing from, but they know people that have money as well.
Yeah.
So I go to them and say, "Hey, I need more money. I'm growing. I still have more flips.
Yeah.
Still going to be using you, but I need more money. If you refer me to somebody, you'll get 3% of the profit from the flip every time I use him or her.
That's awesome.
So then they go, "Oh, I have a buddy, you know, that has money."
Dude, that's really smart.
So then now I just made another connection, and who better to introduce me than the person I'm using already? Yeah, so I've got credibility already. So man. Then
that's brilliant. I like that model.
Then they come and go, boom. So, you know, you get a check in the mail and it's like, "Hey, what's this for?" It's like, "Well, I just used your buddy, for a flip and this is your profit from it."
Yeah. Talk about honesty, a value add.
That's so like, if you're listening and you haven't gotten to that opportunity yet where you can give back to other people who have helped you yet, it is probably the most rewarding thing about everything we do.
The flips are cool
and like, you know, being able to, you know, run a fun business is fun, but being able to give back to other people in a way like that, where somebody's literally like, "Why are you giving me this?" And they can't figure out why you're doing something so kind.
Yeah.
That is so fun.
Yeah. You can only make so much money, and the more you make, the less joy that when I made like $60,000 a year, each one of those dollars brought me a certain amount of joy or happiness, right? Now that we're pushing $1 million a year, those dollars bring a little less joy every time, right? Like, making money doesn't bring the same satisfaction. I get way more satisfaction by the dollars that I give away, or knowing that I help somebody create an avenue. Like, we have a private money lender who's like, we have drastically changed what his retirement will look like, because we said, "Hey man, you came into some money. What does this look like if you start investing now? This is sure, it's going to be slow, but 10 years down the road, when you do retire, you won't be that guy living off a fixed income. You'll have passive money coming in from investments." He also showed so much faith in him that, again, we're big into value add. We put him on as a partner in some of our portfolio stuff in Indiana.
Exactly.
And like, he's going to have money coming in forever based on decisions that he's making now, like add value. And that brings so much more joy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's cool. Well, hey, we're like at an hour, and I know this conversation would never end unless we cap us. So Ryan, what any books or podcasts or information that you would recommend that they listen to or read?
Well, Bigger Pockets is huge. There's a lot of good content and info on there, and you can ask a lot of questions. And then if you're looking to, you know, get into it and you're not really sure, I had to kind of really find my way. And I think you jump out to one of these people that's done it.
Yeah.
Offer them something of value, and that you can give them in exchange to be learning, whether it's, you know, I'm going to go hustle for you and do some door knocking for you for a while. And you know, I'm not going to, you know, get the money from the flips you make off of that, but I'm helping you do something. And then the flipper is teaching you things to do. And I know, you know, as I get people, maybe this project manager at some point, or this acquisition manager as a person at some point, they'll probably go out on their own.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to teach them how to raise money.
Yeah.
I'm going to teach them how to, actually this one gal I'm working on bringing on right now, one of her things is I said, go read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Cashflow Quadrant. And I want you to come back with at least $500,000 of raised money.
Dang. That's impressive.
So, and I went through the process. How do you do this? Okay. Write down all the people, you know.
Yeah.
I told her some things to, you know, talk about, you know, you can ask them directly, or you can, you know, ask it indirectly by saying, "Hey, I'm, you know, talking with them. I just got, you know, I'm working with this investor.
Yeah.
We're looking for some more money. We, you know, pay, you know, 10% return.
Yeah.
With a secured deed of trust on the property. If you know anyone that would like that.
Yeah. Oh, I do.
And then, oh, yeah. So you indirectly asked it. Yeah. But then they go, hey, oh, wait, wait, what about me?
Why aren't you asking me?
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah,
it depends on what you think that person's response will be if you just go straight up to them and they go, no. So, you know, that gal probably at some point will go on her own. Yeah. But she's going to add value to me in the meantime.
Yeah. And that's okay.
And that's your that's your abundance mindset again shining through, because you're not saying, we have people in our market who, like, I remember when I very first moved here, I was like, tell me how you scaled your business. And they don't want to share. And the funniest thing is,
crazy,
we're bigger than, humbly, I'm not trying to come across in the wrong way, but we are much larger than those people who didn't want to share information. And
well, like, I think all of us that talk, we get stuff from each other.
Yeah.
And we've talked about a high level mastermind. Yep. Yeah. I just don't have time to do it, but I would love to get, okay, you know, you have a handful and you have to be invited that is high level and talk and go, oh, hey, you know, I added this clause into this, or I did this to this, and help everyone learn to grow and become even better.
We actually, we didn't tell you this yet. You're already on a list that you didn't know about, but now that we got our office space, we're actually building out the list and we're starting to lay out like a schedule for that high level.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So, I'm glad you guys.
Yeah, we're gonna get it started. I think it's gonna be an invite only, and I think there's gonna be some sort of buy-in, and then
there has to be.
You got to put I don't want to make money on it. So that's the one thing I've been wrestling on my head with. Like sure.
No, what about a charity?
A charity. Or I was thinking
this much.
Yeah, you buy in and we do this retreat at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Like in that the buy-in cost, because half of it goes to charity and half of it goes to that retreat.
Having a buy-in is huge.
Yeah. Because I don't.
It needs to be a commitment.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Because you could get I can invite high level players, but if they didn't buy in, or they
going to
show up
every time?
But for
this little bit of money that you buy in, the amount of value you can make is like huge.
Astronomical.
Yeah.
It's an infinite return.
Infinite return.
And just getting closer to those people, like on a friendship level.
Yeah.
You know, like I would love to spend, that would do a lot even for us.
Yeah.
We're pretty good friends, but if we got to spend an extra hour a month together just talking real estate.
Yep.
Well, and I've talked to you about creating a equity share.
Yeah, I love that idea. Yep. Yeah, explain that real quick before we.
So real quick, there's these timeshares.
I'm the watch guy, so I'm always watching. We're good.
I'll go fast. So I've talked with Noah before, but there's timeshares out there. Yeah. What I want to create is an equity share. So you get four or five people.
Yeah.
And everyone's 20-25% ownership.
Okay.
We pool some money together. We go buy a vacation rental in like Costa Rica.
Yeah.
So each year, each person gets two weeks a year there. Okay. Anytime you go there, it's a write-off on your taxes.
Yep.
Spend a couple more years, you get some more money. We go and buy another one in Jamaica.
Yeah.
So we do this, and pretty soon we've got 5, 6, 7 properties that we are equity shares with. We rent them out when no one's there.
Yeah.
And it's places we can go to and
Now your vacations are write-off.
Yeah, now your vacations are write-off.
Sign me up. Where's the line? I don't even need to read the contract.
I know.
Got the check in my truck.
Yeah, it's good. Noah will pay for me.
Exactly.
I love that, man. That is a great idea. Cool. Well, hey, man, we really appreciate you coming on. For our listeners who maybe want to reach out to you, get a hold of you, ask you some questions, what's the easiest way for them to reach out to you?
Yeah, so you can either email me, ryan@westernstates.com, or you can call me, 208-608-1260.
Dang, the boy dropped his phone number,
abundance,
man.
Though.
Let's
He's
go.
Not afraid to help people. Yeah. I was actually going to joke, and I was going to pretend and say, and here's his phone number in the link below. But then you actually did it.
That's fine.
I love it, man.
You
that's
are so awesome.
Awesome,
brother. Thank you so much for hopping on, man.
Yeah,
truly
thank
an
you
honor
guys.
To have you on.
Heck yeah.
Appreciate
thanks
it.
For having me on.
All right, guys, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for the next episode.
All right, guys, thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
Please subscribe to our YouTube channel in the show notes below. And if you ever want to get a hold of us, feel free to do it via our Instagrams. You can also follow us for our funny content on TikTok.